College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
In the news this morning, and we'll talk about the heat, how hot it's going to get, 71 degrees right now. We want to update you on the officer still on a ventilator, a machine that's breathing for him, if you will, fighting for his life after being shot in the line of duty over the weekend. So we're learning new details from police, city officials, investigators. We know that the officer is from the 25th District, has been in the ICU since Saturday night when he was gunned down in the line of duty. His identity has not yet officially been released at the request of his wife, his family. Philadelphia Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel said this during a press conference they held yesterday. So 36-year-old Ramon Rodriguez Vasquez has been arrested and charged following the shooting after a huge manhunt, a barricade situation. So this suspect, Vasquez, he is being held on a $12.5 million bail. They say that the authorities are saying that body camera, there's a ton of body camera video evidence that captured much of what happened here. But the question of why were they pulling over this individual in the first place? He was stopped because he was driving a car with a temporary license plate, no proper registration. This happened in Kensington, and he has no driver's license.
Do we know if he is a legal citizen? Has that been deemed yet or determined?
That is, I do not officially have that information for you.
Okay.
If you had to guess, Dawn Stenslin, just a wild guess, would your answer be yes or no?
I would, if we're going to take bets on whether or not he was born in Philadelphia, I suspect he was not born in Philadelphia.
I think it's a safe bet to make.
But I don't have that. I honestly don't have that information.
You're just making a prediction.
So we have two officers, obviously the one of them, and it's an incredible story. Two officers, they conduct this traffic stop, 2003 dark blue Toyota Echo. This is 7:18 p.m. Saturday evening. So it's still light out, right, because the days are so much longer with the official day of summer last week. So it's still light out. This is not in the dark. Conversation mostly in Spanish. We have that from the authorities. And the driver who's been ID'd as Vasquez did not have that license. And the vehicle was not registered. The wounded officers, so they start asking questions of him. Then they realize that they see a gun holster. And as they're realizing this and making a move, that's when they say Vasquez, you know, runs out of the vehicle, turns while he's running out of the vehicle, shoots three times. So the one officer, he realizes, he turns, he sees his partner is down and shot in the neck in particular. So the partner immediately then is helping his fallen partner. They said that the tow truck driver was critical, helping the partner get the critically injured officer, very quickly into the patrol car so they could quickly rush him to Temple University Hospital.
Yeah.
Knowing that every second, obviously, I mean, yeah, if he can survive this and he's in very critical condition, it will be due to this tow truck, his partner and the tow truck driver.
Yeah.
I mean, seconds matter.
No time to wait for medics and an ambulance. No, you take that into your own hands.
So they, and then the tow truck driver stayed there and guarded the scene until the other officers could arrive, by the way.
Wow.
So hero tow truck driver. And then it's not over with. So you have on one, and remember during this time, Trump is on stage at the Lee Corus Center.
That's right.
When all this is going down, by the way.
Yep.
At this point, the suspect now, he tries to carjack a passing maroon minivan, but they've released some of the video of this. They want to talk to the minivan owner, but he doesn't. He starts to open the door, trying to get into the vehicle. The minivan driver, thank goodness, gets away. And, you know, thank God, probably saved their life. Now he goes and takes a hostage in his home an innocent victim who thank God survived that one after a barricade situation. And finally, they resolved that with the hostage of the barricade situation, that individual speaking out, and he's okay. So at this point, they have the suspect who is deemed very dangerous.
I'd be willing to bet he's got a rap sheet and a list of priors from here to Sunday. Just an assumption.
And 36 years old.
And the fact that they had to speak to him in Spanish also tells me everything I need to know about this case.
Mm-hmm.
It does not speak English.
Ah, shocking.
Yep.
So we have that going on.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Philadelphia police interviewing family members in the Frankfurt section of the city. An 8-year-old boy was shot in the leg. So police say that this happened yesterday afternoon, right before 1 o'clock. Reports of a shooting. They find a child suffering from a gunshot wound. He's at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children in stable condition. Looks like this is not life-threatening. Now, several family members are saying that it looks like the boy found the gun outside, brought it into the house, and was playing with it. So they're trying to figure out, is that true? Where did he get this firearm? We don't have answers.
Okay.
Under investigation. I know. So we have that going on. By the way, there's a breaking news story this morning. I don't usually do traffic. There are a lot of traffic accidents. There's one in Bucks, but there's a deadly accident. Two people killed in this head-on crash. Philadelphia's Hunting Park section this morning, Broad and Hunting Park Ave. So this two vehicles collided in the intersection. One car burst into flames, trapping a person inside. So believe it or not, I mean, this happened a couple hours ago. This is still a mess. They're diverting traffic. Just a heads up on that one.
Right.
I know you're going to talk about Julian Assange. He's on a plane and cut a deal. We'll talk about that one. We have to get to the story of COVID. There's a case. There are some stories of COVID cases on the rise in 39 states.
Uh-oh.
I saw the story and I thought, wait a minute.
Election season.
I know. I thought, oh, no, this must be an old story, and I'm just pulling, you know. No, it's today. So the CDC is putting out a warning that they are anticipating a summer COVID wave.
Mm. Oh, for God's
summer
sake.
COVID wave.
Well, if it's not the red wave, it's a COVID wave. There will be a wave this summer, folks.
Oh, my goodness.
So are we just going to work remotely for the rest of the summer?
No.
Do my show from my new place?
No.
Kitchen table?
Well, there was a red wave last night in Detroit.
Yeah, how about that?
Philadelphia Phillies beat the Tigers 8-1.
Did I see this correctly? Because I didn't watch the game. I was still so busy last night and just kind of getting caught up. Did the Phillies convert a triple play against Detroit, or was it the other way around?
Nick Cale, the Phillies did that against Detroit. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, let's hear Scott Fransky.
Okay, here we go.
Broke his bat, loops it right back to the mound. Harper will get the double play, and now they'll throw it to third for a triple play.
Triple play.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Okay. McKinstry had no idea what was going on.
Tom McCarthy, the TV feed there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I once hit in, you know me, I don't care, I'll just say it. I hit into a triple play once in slow pitch softball.
Well, that compares.
Yes. How about that?
Like the mom in me is like, good for you. You know what I mean? Like this, God. You know?
It was not a stellar moment.
Yeah, awesome.
Trust me.
Man.
Yeah, I never lived it down.
What I love is listen to all the Philadelphia Phillies fans in Detroit.
Best team in baseball.
Isn't that awesome?
Indeed.
Detroit stinks, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're in Detroit today, tomorrow, and then heading home just in time for a gorgeous day weather-wise Thursday. So Tuesday today, 91 degrees, does not feel as humid. Tomorrow, Wednesday, is the hot one, 95 degrees.
Boy, that wind was crazy yesterday.
It was.
Oh, yes, it was. I had to run a couple of errands, and I look over at my wife yesterday. I go, you know, 2 days ago when we were unloading the truck, it was 96 with like 100% humidity. Today it's 78 and breezy. Timing.
Yeah, it was crazy wind. But so tomorrow, we have to get through tomorrow, because then tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening, we could see some severe storms as a cold front moves through.
Cold front?
Cold front.
Wow.
Cold front moving through with the storms. So lightning and storms, it'll cool us down. And then Thursday, that tees us up for the Phils coming home. That'll be gorgeous and 88 degrees, but it'll feel the humidity. We'll get a piece of relief from the humidity Thursday. Friday, bright, sunny, gorgeous Friday, 85 degrees. And then heading into the weekend, we will heat up 88 Saturday, 92 Sunday. And it looks like with both of those pop up, almost like that Florida weather where you have that pop up, you know, rain shower. I don't think it's a washout of any nature or any kind, but we will just watch out for that, especially if you're at the beach. So we might see some thunder storms just quickly roll through, bring some rain, bring some relief, that sort of thing. Kale and Company, News Live.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much. 6:16, let's get to a Tuesday Big Take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
The Big Take this morning: who exactly is Trump's opponent? Donald Trump is set to debate Joe Biden on CNN Thursday night, but the gloves came off Monday morning as debate week got underway with a bang. I have said for the last couple of weeks on this show that the one thing you need to watch for outside of Biden's competency level and his energy levels is how CNN will moderate this debate. I've said multiple times on the show that I guarantee you they will not interrupt, fact check, or cut off Joe Biden mid-speech while Trump's microphone is muted, because they don't want to derail the big guy's train of thought. But it's also been my belief that they will absolutely interrupt, fact check, and speak over Trump when it's his turn and Biden's microphone is muted. Yesterday on CNN, I believe we got a precursor, a spoiler alert, if you will, of what's to come on Thursday night. Cut off, censored, canceled, and nobody does it better than the once most trusted name in news, CNN. Casey Hunt is a host and anchor at CNN. She's also a local gal who attended Conestoga High School in Chester County. And Hunt was interviewing Donald Trump's national press secretary, Caroline Levitt, and then decided to act like a child when Levitt took Jake Tapper to task for his years of attacks on Donald Trump. Listen and watch this.
It takes someone 5 minutes to Google Jake Tapper, Donald Trump, to see that Jake Tapper has
I'm going to stop this interview if you continue to attack my colleagues. I would like to talk about Joe Biden and Donald Trump, who you work for.
Yes.
If you are here to speak on his behalf, I will have this conversation.
I am stating facts that your colleagues have stated in the past.
Okay. We're going to come back out to the panel. Caroline, thank you very much for your time. You are welcome to come back at any point. She is welcome to come back and speak about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump will have equal time to Joe Biden when they both join us now at later this week in Atlanta for this debate.
Super petty, incredibly immature. No wonder why CNN's ratings are at lows not seen since 1991. By the way, Jake Tapper, or as Trump calls him, Fake Tapper, will be moderating Thursday night's debate with Dana Bash. But it's a classic move by the left. Drown out the one who is speaking when they don't want to hear your answer or they don't like your counterpoints. I can relate. It's called my mother-in-law. CNN issuing this statement: Jake Tapper and Dana Bash are well-respected veteran journalists who have covered politics for more than 5 decades combined. They have extensive experience moderating major political debates, including CNN's Republican presidential primary debate this cycle. There are no two people better equipped to co-moderate a substantial and fact-based discussion, and we look forward to the debate on June 27th in Atlanta. Yeah. All right. At least MSNBC's Trump derangement syndrome gets somewhat respectable ratings. But CNN's hatred and disdain for Trump is closing in on almost a decade, but it doesn't even rate well. An entire network's credibility shot to hell all because of TDS. Hunt followed up tweeting yesterday after being roasted for bailing out of the interview, quote, "You come on my show, you respect my colleagues, period. I don't care what side of the aisle you were on, as my track record clearly shows." To which Levitt tweeted in response, quote, "You cut off my microphone for bringing up the debate moderator's history of anti-Trump lies. This proved our point that President Trump will not be treated fairly on Thursday, yet he is still willing to go into this three-on-one fight to bring his winning message to the American people, and he will win." But what about the history of Trump and Tapper? Here's a montage of Jake Tapper likening Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. Listen and watch.
The dehumanizing rhetoric of Adolf Hitler is once again alive and well on a national political stage. This time, of course, in the United States.
Donald Trump, a couple times over the weekend, referred to immigrants from South America, Africa, and Asia. He did not mention Europe. South America, Africa, and Asia as, quote, poisoning the blood of our country, which it's not hyperbole. That does very directly echo Adolf Hitler's language before World War II. To open up a copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf, you would find the Nazi leader describing the mixing of non-Germans with Germans as poisoning. There's really no other way to say it. Donald Trump's language mirrors this directly.
Anybody that thinks Trump and Hitler should be uttered in the same sentence need to have their head examined. Adolf Hitler killed 6 million Jews. And since October 7th, who has defended the Jews? Well, that would be Republicans and Donald Trump. And who has defended Palestine and Hamas since October 7th? Why, that would be the far left and Democrats. But Tapper's venom for Trump doesn't just revolve around Hitler. It also revolves around Hunter. Tapper posted this on Twitter on October 30th of 2020, just days before the last election. Quote, since Twitter has locked out the New York Post for violating rules that no longer stand as rules, the New York Post could end this standoff by deleting the tweets that broke the rules and then tweet them out again. This was in reference to Miranda Devine's accurate reporting of the true, confirmed, and verified Hunter Biden laptop story that was ultimately suppressed by social media. And has Jake Tapper ever apologized about the nonstop media coverage that claimed the laptop was Russian disinformation? Has Jake Tapper ever criticized the 51 intel officers that deemed it misinformation? Tapper's obsession with Trump has spanned many, many years. Other notable moments included him saying Trump's presidency was, quote, a long national nightmare. That quote came on election night in 2020 when the race was called for Biden. Tapper declared, quote, for the tens of millions of our fellow Americans, their long national nightmare is over. Keep in mind, Jake Tapper got really rich talking about Donald Trump those 4 years, by the way. And of course, this moment when Tapper said a wanton disregard for human life, that in reference to Trump getting COVID himself. Tapper said, quote, of course, everybody here at the lead is hoping for a full and speedy recovery. But we must acknowledge Trump's refusal to abide by his own administration's health experts. Hey, Jake, how did Fauci and those experts end up turning out? They were wrong on a lot of things, from the vaccine efficacy, 100% safe and effective, to the masks, to social distancing that we now know was just made up on the fly, to the admission that school closures were a mistake. Have you admitted that yet when you were lecturing from your soapbox? And lastly, Tapper also snapped at his producers, telling them to not air footage of Trump with his supporters following his not guilty plea in the classified documents case in Miami, saying, quote, to the folks in the control room, I don't need to see any more of that. He's trying to turn this into a spectacle, a campaign ad. That's enough of that. Meanwhile, according to JustTheNews.com, headline reads, CNN's Jake Tapper at center of defamation lawsuit as he prepares to host presidential debate. You can read about that story at justthenews.com. So as Thursday night looms, the question is, who is Trump debating? Who is his actual opponent? Is it Joe Biden? Is it Jake Tapper? Is it Dana Bash? Is it CNN as a whole? Is it the production team in the truck? Is it the fact checkers that will be in Jake's ear? Seems to me like Donald Trump is not only walking into a home field advantage for the Democrat, but this is a hornet's nest that will explode right from the opening bell on Thursday night in Atlanta, Georgia. But I have no doubt that Trump, who has been in the crosshairs of CNN for 9 years, will emerge like he always does, unfazed, unbothered, unblemished, and CNN will continue to be the biggest joke in mainstream media. And that's the big take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
All right, big take this morning. If you want to jump in, thoughts and reactions, 855-839-1210 on social media at 1210WPHT. And, of course, fire away in the Kale and Company comment community. Just go to youtube.com/at1210WPHT. Hit the like and subscribe button and have your thoughts seen, read, and heard today. We'll come back, get everybody's thoughts on that, because I've got a couple of questions as to what the motivation was for that entire appearance yesterday from CNN, as well as from the Trump campaign. We'll kick that around as we continue. 6 o'clock hour off and running here on a Tuesday morning. It's Nick, Dawn, and Greg. Kale and Company, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.
2 days and change away from the big spot on Thursday night in Atlanta, Georgia. We'll look at it from both the Trump and Biden perspective coming up here in just a few moments. I'm not sure when this broke yesterday. I know this interview was happening during our show. I think maybe the second half of the show?
We did it. We did it in the cut sheet.
Part one?
Yeah.
Okay.
As usual, I was on top of everything.
Greg is always on top
yeah.
of everything.
Yes. Well, you know, alphas like to be on top.
Yeah, exactly.
You control the energy.
Thank you, thank you very much. Yeah,
we don't know. That was great that you got, because it just happened.
It did just happen. Thank you very much.
So I have an interesting question I want to ask Stocker, but Dawn, I want to ask you about this, and I don't know what your thoughts were yesterday, but how bad of a look is this when you are a sinking news network right now, and Casey Hunt is a local gal? Is this a really, really, really bad look for her and or the network, as they have tried to say that they're trying to be more centrist and fair and balanced in this whole nonsense? Because that came off in, I mean, I don't know how many times she brought up Tapper over the course of the full interview, mm-hmm. but I mean, you even heard her at the end of that clip that I played in the Big Take. You could hear it in her voice.
Yes.
Like, she was almost like shaking, and her voice was, like, have you ever been in a situation where maybe you're a little rattled and you start snapping
yes.
back? Like, I could hear it in her voice change.
You mentioned your mother-in-law.
Yes. Well, that's what she does.
It was kind of like when one of your relatives gets your aunt or your mother-in-law, and you better, like, it started like quivering.
Yes.
And it was just because, you know, it's one thing to be professional and to say, yo, these are my colleagues. You know, I let you say something first, but let's move on. Let's move on or something. Mm-hmm. But she was so emotional about it.
Right.
That's what made it. I was surprised, to be honest, because I mean, she's obviously been doing this, and she's at CNN as an anchor. That's the piece that the managers are looking at. I'm sure in her newsroom they're like, thanks, Casey, but deep down, it was not a good look for her.
And it's, you know, not in her defense, but just looking at it just completely objectively, it's not her job to defend or rip Jake Tapper. Jake Tapper can do that himself on his own show. But when you're the moderator, as Jake Tapper as, and you have this 9-year track record, I don't think it would take much for Casey Hunt, and maybe this just speaks to Casey Hunt or news anchors in television today that aren't really quick-witted on the fly and can't come up with a rebuttal because maybe they're not reading off of a prompter or a prepared. But like, if you're having on Trump's national spokesperson, and Trump is going to be in a setting with a person that he's gone after for years and vice versa, he calls him fake Tapper, Jake Tapper compares him to Hitler, don't you have to have a more of a witty, clever rebuttal than just shouting somebody down and bailing on the interview and cutting the person off? That to me seems low energy and very unable to adjust on the fly on your feet.
True, but that's what the other side does. It's all about emotion.
Yeah.
It's there are no facts, because in truth, what Caroline Leavitt was saying was factual. I mean, so the question is, so Caroline Leavitt, what she's insinuating here, she's saying, hey, Trump took this knowing that you guys are this biased. And mm-hmm. basically, Casey Hunt, to me, proved her point.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly because of how emotional she became.
Right. Very triggered, very
unhinged.
Because
it's like, I just looked at her and thought, wow, she is somebody who, triggered is the word. I feel like she hates Donald Trump. She doesn't like Caroline Leavitt. She doesn't like it. You know, she doesn't like conservatives. She doesn't want to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
She does not want to have the conversation. And she cannot have a conversation, look eye to eye with a conservative individual and talk about issues. She's just going to get emotional.
Yeah.
And so to me, that was the worst of it. That, to your point about the fact that she had nothing quick-witted to say, or just put her in her place.
Mm-hmm.
Say, all right, enough. You're bashing my colleagues. They can, I'll let them speak for themselves. Let's move on,
right,
Caroline.
Right. Let's keep this interview moving.
Yeah.
There's other things we have to get to that are more pressing.
I thought she was going to cry. And what's the whole thing? So she's from this area?
Yeah, she's a Chester County girl.
Right? So if she were from the South, then I could understand that she says ma'am, because mm-hmm. you're taught that in the South.
Right.
But what's the ma'am thing?
Mm-hmm.
Ma'am?
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 And Caroline Leavitt's probably, 15, 20 years younger than... I mean, Caroline Leavitt looks like she's fresh out of college.
She's 25.
That's what I figured.
I looked her up. She turns 26 in August.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, she is so impressive and composed for somebody.
She really did handle herself well for being pretty green.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say this, and we're I'm not criticizing us, but this is pro wrestling, guys. This is all.
I swear to God, I have this written down here. I literally, let me read this to you. I said, Greg, was this by design to drive up interest in viewers on Thursday night in late June? Was this a work, as they call in wrestling?
It was a complete work.
I literally wrote that down.
No.
Yes, it 100% was.
Casey Hunt is not an actress. That was not an act.
This is all we're being bamboozled. We're being look over here. Look at the shiny things over here. Let's work them. Let's talk them into the building. Right.
Selfishly, if you're the network, if you're the bosses, you're probably like, wow. If nobody was going to tune in because it's late June and it's summer and it's earlier than ever for a debate, I'll tell you what, yesterday just drove up maybe a little bit of an interest, right?
CNN, you know, for all their talk about Trump is a threat to democracy, Trump is this, let's bring on a spokesperson. And for all the talk on the Trump side about being CNN is fake news, let's go on CNN. It's all a work. Stop falling for it. Stop being fooled by these people.
You think it'll work by both sides?
It's talking them into the building. It's wrestling. That's all this is.
Wait, so Greg Stocker sees Caroline Leavitt and Casey Hunt, and he thinks
wrestling. These
two should be wrestling. Mud wrestling?
Yeah.
No, that's a little sexist, Greg.
I think
Caroline Leavitt, who would win that one?
Oh, Caroline Leavitt.
Caroline would kick her butt. What do you think?
Yeah, younger, more composed.
They know that nobody gives a S about this debate. Nobody cares about this debate. Nobody wants to see it.
We're going to have to predict the ratings, by the way.
It's a rerun. Nobody wants to see it, so they need to talk people into the building.
All right. I mean, Big Bang Theory reruns get great numbers, I'm just saying. 855-839-1210, the phone number. So let's get to the debate week itself, preparation, strategy. Two interesting stories. This one about Joe Biden, I'll start with that, and then we'll get to what Trump has pivoted to, which I kind of like, I think is smart. And I'm going to make an analogy as to why I've seen this in the past, and it pays off. But first, the Biden campaign lays out their debate week strategy in a new memo. This story courtesy of NBC News, where the Biden campaign and its allies are planning to hold 1,600 events this week and run a new slate of TV and digital ads ahead of the debate on Thursday, which they called, quote, one of the first moments where a larger slice of the American electorate will tune in to the campaign. Obviously, they are going to advocate and pander to the LGBTQ community. It is still Pride Month, of course, and college students. And they are apparently going to hold 300 debate night watch parties, some of which will be hosted by social media content creators. So they're pandering to that 18 to 29 demo that can't get off of social media. And the pre-debate push kicked off yesterday, where they're going to host 16 events across a dozen states. Yesterday, obviously, the two-year anniversary of Roe v. Wade. The Biden campaign looking to present the debate as, quote, two distinct visions for the future. Voters will, quote, see President Biden, who is fighting for the American people, and Donald Trump, who will walk on stage as a convicted felon. Obviously, again, that's the whole point of these indictments. They wanted to label him convicted felon. Those two words mean the world to them. You know, they love words more than actions. But also, Biden's spokesman, Michael Tyler, said in the memo, they're going to lay out their key issues where they say, quote, Trump continues to pose the most extreme threat. So honestly, for the Biden campaign and this memo, it's business as usual. It's pandering to young people, student loan bailouts. It's pandering to the LGBTQ plus community. And it's about making Donald Trump look like a threat as if he is Adolf Hitler. We're convinced, interestingly, on a different level, I actually have to give the Trump campaign credit for this. And I think this makes a lot of sense. And I'm not sure everybody will buy it and some will see through it. But I want to give you a sports analogy in a moment. This headline from CNN, why Donald Trump is suddenly talking up Biden after months of slamming his cognitive capacity. CNN writes the following. After months lampooning President Joe Biden as a cognitively impaired, brain-dead zombie who can't finish a sentence or navigate off stage, former President Trump and his campaign are changing their tune days ahead of the election debate. The commander-in-chief has suddenly morphed into a, quote, worthy debater with considerable ability, a veteran political performer who is not to be underestimated, according to Trump and his lieutenants. But the Trump's team shift is remarkable, CNN writes, given their relentless assault on Biden's faculties. And they're pondering and hinting at the possible concerns that they've set an unnecessarily low bar for the president's performance ahead of Thursday night in Atlanta. I would disagree with that. I think Joe has set the bar so low for himself. But here's the analogy I want to make. This is a smart game week moment where you stop trash talking your opponent. You don't give them bulletin board material. You also don't want to discredit what is likely to be a win, I think, debate-wise, unless CNN completely hijacks it, which is completely possible, with Tapper, Bash, fact-checkers, and people with earpieces in. I think this is a likely win for Trump. But if you're going to compete against somebody in the days leading up to it, it's like a boxing fight, right? You've been selling it. You've been selling it. People are buying the pay-per-view. They're buying it. They're ready to watch it. And then all of a sudden at the weigh-in, you show respect for your opponent, even though you don't respect the opponent and you think you can beat him, and you probably will, because you never want to discredit your own victory. So I think this is actually a smart move for Trump. And I know, Dawn, you and I disagreed last week about Trump's strategy on that debate stage. I think he should go full throttle, cutthroat. You're of the differing opinion.
Yeah, I want to see him as presidential and talk about the issues, own it, because he has the winning record. He has the peace and prosperity piece to it. He has a winning record, and he can point to that. But also just the fact that next to Joe Biden, he, you know, just his look, just his presence.
Mm-hmm.
Let that settle in as you see the two of them together.
Picture's worth a thousand words.
Yes, because I think it will be startling. You have somebody who's very frail and elderly, and just the way he even moves is that it will be a sharp contrast to Trump, who is in fighting condition.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think of their age when you see the two of them together, that they're only a few years apart.
Right.
I mean, it shows you this whole thing. People are talking about genetic age, and obviously your genetics, your DNA has a place with that. But with Trump, no. Mm-hmm. Do not go overboard. Be presidential and be proud of your record. Own it. But let him go on, because the more rope you give Biden, the more he just talks on and on. And I'm glad that Trump's microphone will be cut. That camera will be center focused on Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he loses his train of thought, I mean, this is tragic, really. But when he does, and he most likely will,
mm-hmm.
he'll say, well, anyway, and then the camera will stay on him. There will be this moment. And I think if you don't use your 2 minutes, keep the camera on.
Yeah.
This camera is going to stay on you.
Right.
And your mic is going to stay on for the 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the moderator, shut it.
Yep.
They get the 2 minutes. Let that 2 minutes go.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too. Doug Burgum, who a lot of people think will be Trump's vice president, using the same talking points of this pivot from the Trump administration, he said on CNN's State of the Union on Sunday, and this is North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, quote, is in regards to Biden, the guy's run for office for more than a dozen times. He's run for president 4 times. He's been campaigning since President Nixon was in office. This guy has got the ability. So if you read between the lines here, Trump, the Trump campaign, the Trump team basically hyping up Joe Biden. And here's Burgum, who is now one of 3 VP finalists, uttering the same talking points. Maybe that's a bit of a spoiler as to who will be the vice president. 855-839-1210. We'll come back, put a bow on the 6 o'clock hour. Spell check on your signs, folks. Spell check, or it'll cost you $100,000. It's Kale and Company, back after this.
Oh, summer is upon us. No time like the present to get back out on the roads. My friends from Piazza Premium Automobiles, they're always going to help you find that luxury vehicle you've been eyeing. You've earned it. Now go get it with a little help from my friends at Piazza. They have thousands of new and certified pre-owned vehicles from brands. And these are some of the most beautiful, powerful, sleek vehicles on the roadways. Mercedes-Benz, Land Rover, Jaguar, Maserati, BMW, Porsche, Alfa Romeo, and more. Just visit them, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com. Stop by one of their Pennsylvania, Delaware, or New Jersey dealers, PIAZZA, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com. Tell them Dawn sent you.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
PennDOT has hit it under a black cloak, as you now see on YouTube, where they threw a big curtain over top of it because they've got to fix it. Now, here's my question for this.
Yeah.
When it comes to this mistake, if you misspelled it as you're designing the sign and whoever mass produces these things for the state of Pennsylvania, PennDOT, whatever, and you get it wrong, okay, I got you. We all make spelling mistakes. But how do you go forward with putting it up where nobody caught it? Because now, apparently, it's going to cost $100,000. Now, the Philadelphia Inquirer reporting that the total cost will be handled from the contractor. So they are going to be the ones that have to pay for it. So it's not going to come out of taxpayer dollars. But the total cost for the lighting, foundation, and installation of that improperly spelled sign was $100,000. And now they're going to make the change. But if you see it and you're driving in that area, you'll probably notice that black curtain thrown over top of it.
It's amazing.
Central.
It's ridiculous.
C-E-N-R-T-A-L.
I want to know is how many workers
how many people drove
said,
by that?
Looks good to us.
Yeah, it's a go. Put it up. It can be erected.
So funny.
This PennDOT executive saying, quote, this error should not have happened and definitely should have been caught before the sign was installed. We are reviewing our processes to ensure that this doesn't happen again.
They have spell check? Sorry.
Well, this is what happens when you put Fetterman in charge of proofreading.
Wasn't that the exit where that accident happened, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why I bring up Fetterman, because I just keep hearing him say 95, 95, 95.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they've covered it up. So what's the net cost to us? It's like $15,000.
Is that what? Is a cost to us.
I think there is some cost that it's more like $15,000 because even though they have to replace the sign, we have to pay for some of it to reinstallation.
Yeah. Email statement yesterday coming from PennDOT spokesperson Alexis Campbell. By the way, that's A-L-E-X-I-S if you're trying to spell names properly here. But yeah, Central, T-R-A-L, not R-T-A-L.
Well, Central.
Central.
Central. Central.
Central. I can't even say it. It's such a miscue that you can't even pronounce it.
Central.
Central. It's like the front hole.
No.
We talked about that a while ago. All right, 6:54, we'll come back, kick off hour number two. Dawn has some news to start the 7 o'clock hour. And then after that, Trump's vice president search, it's been whittled down to 3. What do we make of it? We'll get into that on the other side. Kale & Company continues next.
Start your day with Kale & Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10, on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.